what would your valuation be?
Probably between 10 to 15 million.
Hugo and Rupert are about to solve a billion-dollar problem. They left high-paying jobs and put it all on the line to figure this out. But if they can't figure this out, they're done.
How do we make it super easy for you to act like a great content creator, spot the moment, spot the thing that everyone understands, and then use it really well in a branded context?
Let me freeze you right there, Hugo, because what you said was the best thing you've said this entire conversation. It's
You're listening to Making It with John Davids.
All right, let's get into it. Rupert and Hugo, thanks for joining. Hugo, why don't you tell me about your company and who you are just in about 30 seconds?
For sure. I'm the product co-founder of a business called Pockler. And Pockler is a AI-driven content ideation tool designed to deliver content ideas straight to the fingertips of marketers and help them plan their content calendar up to 12 months in advance.
So you make it easier for them, and give me one or two examples of something that you would do that makes it easier for them.
We deliver content ideas, which every single marketer in a small to medium-sized consumer-facing enterprise needs. The theory behind that is that content is becoming ever more important. And John, I know, I think you agree with this based on the content that I read from you every single week on LinkedIn. It's more and more important to be delivering great content to your audiences to capture their attention, particularly at a time where the efficacy of paid advertising seems to be ever eroding. And so Pockler helps marketers get these ideas without them having to lift a finger. And we do a lot of work in the background to understand the business and the audience and the moments happening in the audience's life. And we can kind of double click on that in just a second. And that mix of those inputs enables us to create content ideas that are usable. And a lot of AI tools at the moment, our users tend to tell us what's coming out of these tools is not usable. I have to spend a lot of time tweaking it. And Pockler is designed in a way that creates content ideas that the user can take from the platform and put straight onto the social media platforms that they're using to market themselves.
So Rupert, do you guys pitch yourself as an AI tool, or is it something else? How do you frame yourself to the client?
It's funny. There's two schools of thought that we're finding with clients. The client that's absolutely terrified by us going in and saying we're an AI business, and the client that wants to embed AI into their systems. So Hugo and I spend a lot of time as a two talking about customer benefits and trying to put everything we do into their language and selling those benefits and those outcomes rather than the fact that we're an AI business. So do we put ourselves as an AI business to our customers? No, we absolutely don't. Do we to our investors? Very much more so, yeah.
Well, you got to get that valuation, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're actually going through our seed fundraise right now as we speak. So just in the midst of talking customer benefits and talking valuation multiples, which is fun, as you know.
And can you share how much you're raising or what your valuation is? Where I want to get a sense of what the market is right now.
Yeah, we're trying to give away a maximum of 20% and raising somewhere between 1.5 to 2 million pounds. Those, as you know, those valuation multiples across your side of the pond are just so wildly different that we have to have two very different types of conversations with US capital that we're bringing in and European capital as well.
So at that valuation, you're a sub $10 million company.
Yes.
That's crazy. And so you think in America, what would your valuation be?
Probably between 10 to 15 million. I believe the median right now for a seed stage B2B SaaS is $12.5 million. Over in Europe, it's more like 7, 8 million pounds. They really are very different.
And is this your first round of funding, or have you guys raised already?
We raised in 2022 from a group of 12 angels. And we're very lucky to get some incredible figureheads and captains of industry on our cap table who have been unbelievably supportive on kind of guiding us, opening doors for us, and also backing us in this next round as well.
So what problem are you guys facing today?
Hughes,
we're facing many, many problems. I think that the number one problem I think we're facing right now is communicating just the vast plethora of benefits we think we can deliver to our customers, to our investors, and showing that we have got this amount of delivered value and these proof points for delivered value, and then tying that to realized value in the pricing structure and communicating that to our investors and getting buy-in right now. That's main effort. You know, we can also talk about product build and kind of customer facing problems. But the one that we're facing day in, day out right now during in the midst of a fundraise is looking investors in the eye and getting them to be as excited as we are right now. And we're having pretty good success doing that. But I think, you know, we're happy to take your advice on this. We found that investors look at SaaS as something that's very easy to start and to get that great kind of hook tier, but then unlocking value into those bigger upsell tiers and that pay for performance pricing that I've mentioned already. That's where you have to do quite a lot of work to convincing them that you've got a product that can do that and can take your valuation to the next level over the next 3 years.
So one of the things that there's been a lot of debate over the years, and I think that the jury's in terms of what's the right way to go, at least in my mind, is when you launch a SaaS product, any real technology product, and frankly, this goes for any product more broadly too, is there's probably one piece of value that customers are getting more than anything else. And it's like, yeah, this is nice to have, that's nice to have on the fringes, but the reason we stick with you guys, whatever product that is for this. So if there was one thing that people would just find it impossible to give up, they're just hooked on it. Do you guys have that one thing in Pakla today?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. So we're really fortunate, and it's a really timely question for us, is that we're really fortunate. We think we have that. And I'll explain it in terms of, for the content marketer, we're trying to become that Instagram feed and that TikTok feed that they cannot get away from when they're sat at home in the evening on their sofa or couch, as you guys say, but at work. And I'll explain that in the sense that there is no limit to the amount of content ideas, good content ideas, that you can receive. And we found that testing with our customers, we're pinging them with up to 9 content ideas a week, and it's arriving into their Slack, it's arriving into their emails. And that fear of missing out, that actually Pakla is sending me moment relevant, audience relevant content ideas, and I don't want to not be the brand in my sector to jump on that idea and get that momentum and build the kind of relationship with that topical moment that's happening in the audience's life. We're seeing really great evidence that 92% of our moments and content ideas are opened. And that is that hooky, addictive tier that, sure, we're still early stage, but we've got some really good leading indicators that that's something that people wouldn't want to miss out on for fear of not being able to impact their audience.
Give me an example. So when you say a hooky or something they don't want to miss out on, like give me a, for instance, from the last week, what's a fictional brand and a fictional content idea that they had to have?
Yeah. So what I'll do just before I answer that question is just explain the two types of moment that Pakla used to trigger the content ideation process. So in an audience's life, we model two different types of moment. The first is a cyclical moment, which might be a New Year's resolutions, Valentine's Day, a long weekend over the Easter break, Christmas holidays and or festive holidays and all the moments attached to those kind of repeatable cyclical events that happen over the year. The second type, and there's brackets within this second type, is reactive moments. And these might be Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift have a kiss at the end of the NFL final. And that's something that everyone's talking about, but it also might be more sector specific trends. So for example, we work with a gin and vodka brand, a sustainable gin and vodka brand in the UK called Sapling Spirits. And firstly, they want to have content ideas for Valentine's Day, which they knew was coming, but they might not have been able to put the effort into. But also, if a new cocktail bar opens in London where they're super focused and they're all about cocktails, they want to know that that's happened. They want to know how to attach themselves to that moment. And they want to be able to put content out onto their TikTok, their Instagram immediately. And Pakla enables them to do that by delivering 3 ideas per moment straight into their inbox.
Okay, so it's idea generation, and I totally get that. And I want to fast forward only because I have 100 ideas I want to give to you guys and some more questions I want to ask. But I have a really good handle on the product itself. So the value is, if I were to sum it up just in layman's terms, it's super high value creative ideas that make it easier for people to come up with stuff that's interesting, that's relevant, that's timely, and all those good things. And that's the value you're giving them. So my question for you is, in terms of pricing, are you giving it to them right now on a flat rate? And Rupert, you can jump in here. Is it a flat rate? Is it tiered packages? How are you pricing this out right now?
Yeah, right now it's flat. Testing willingness to pay. We're building out our tiered structures right now, trying to move to a pay-per-usage system. The reason we're doing that is we're seeing quite a big variance across our brands of usage. Some of the ideas or some of the brands are using around 30-40% of our ideas. Some of the brands are using 80-90% of the content ideas we're sending them per week. So we got to make sure that we're charging those brands that are using our platform much more money. We then have various tiers above what Hugues has been talking about so far, moving away from the ideation for support with execution on the content itself, and also building out more forward-looking content. Much of the feedback we've received from customers so far has been, guys, we love this, thank you very much. Now, can you help us plan out our content calendar 3, 6, 12 months in advance? And the answer
is, so it's the number of ideas. If I'm understanding what you're saying, it's the number of ideas they're getting that would increase. For example, for $100 a month, you get this number of ideas. For $300, you get that number of ideas. Is that what you're saying?
Becoming more forward-looking, exactly that. And if you just think about the two types of moments Hugo outlined to you, those cyclical moments, we can fill a calendar year 12 months, even 2 years in advance with those moments, and yet save that customer an unbelievable amount of time building out those moments and content ideas.
How would you give somebody moments that are that far in advance, 6 months, 12 months in advance, if the social events haven't happened yet?
Because we've got those two different types, John. So we've got the reactive moments, which absolutely you can't predict. They happen in the week. You want to jump on them super quick. But you also have cyclical moments. These are Valentine's Day, New Year's resolutions. I've kind of been through this already. The difference is per client and per audience cohort is that that year of cyclical moments looks very different depending on who you are. So I'll just make that really tangible. For the festive break or the Christmas break, the audience cohort of the cash-strapped mother in the United States, that event of Christmas Day looks like the pressure of buying great presents for your kids as you lead up to Christmas, the stress of making sure that day goes right, and then afterwards the relaxation. Whereas for an audience cohort that's Gen Z or younger, the excitement of what you might receive on that day, the excitement of the day and the lull afterwards is how that plays out. So we model based on who we're trying to capture the attention of, what that cyclical calendar looks like. And we have six, we aim for and guarantee six cyclical moments relevant to your audience cohorts every single month, and three content ideas per moment. So the tier that Rupert's talking about there is that cyclical content calendar, which we upsell. Having started at that super hooky, just ideas coming into your Slack channels, we upsell, okay, now these guys can do our whole content calendar. And then we leave gaps for those reactive moments when that NFL moment happens and you want to jump on it super quick. So that's how that composition of the content calendar looks like. And it's also a step towards us being the operating system for content marketing. And we start looking at how can we eat the market of Sprout Social, Hootsuite, these platforms that have focused on social planning and social analytics. We want to eat that market by starting at the really creative, addictive, hooky ideas part of the value chain, which no one seems to be focusing on right now.
John, please could I ask a question?
Sure. Quick break so I can tell you about DemandScope. DemandScope is a performance marketing agency that helps you acquire new customers, keep them hooked, and scale profitably. Google ads, Instagram ads, TikTok ads, landing pages, email, and more. There are so many ways to get customers today, but if you're not doing it right, you'll end up blowing a whole bunch of money. And that's why I launched DemandScope. We're here to make sure you're doing it right. Get more customers today and scale effectively. Learn more at demandscope.co. That's demandscope.co.
What do you think about our kind of positioning? Because we feel like it's a super, super simple product, but it certainly takes us a bit of time to be able to describe it simply. And you know, you're still asking questions around what we're talking about. Do you think we need to work kind of a little bit harder on the way in which we position the product to ensure you can understand it in 10 seconds?
So, I mean, the quick answer is yes, but everyone does. Like you guys, so like my quick feedback, and it's different because we're having a conversation about the product. You guys are all about features. You're knee deep in your feature suite, which is awesome for you and completely boring for everybody else. Mm. And so you've got to start thinking about benefits. When you think about marketing, it's what is the benefit to the customer, and AI and ideas, like that's all cool. But what I care about is how do I tie that to marketing ROI and marketing KPIs and content KPIs. So that's sort of general feedback, yes. But what I would say from a
you know, from a 30,000 foot level, and I want to get into pricing in a second, but from a 30,000 foot level, the thing that you are selling is we have the most creative idea machine. And that's a hard pitch because I have to believe that it is the most creative. And then I have to believe that it's not 10% more creative, but it's 10 times more creative than anything else I could have. Because that's what you're asking, especially if you're asking somebody to unbundle and untether from Hootsuite or Sprout Social or whatever they're using. It's like, that's a big pain in the ass kind of integration. And so I think two things: getting in with a killer feature is a much easier access point. Here's one feature that we have. It actually plugs in and synchronizes with your Slack, your Hootsuite, everything else you're using. It complements. The pricing is not anything that is offensive, so you don't have to worry about breaking the budget. And that gets you in the door, and then you can start building. You can do a land and expand type strategy. Generically, anytime you're thinking about pricing, the thing you need to think about is, what is the highest point of value for my customer? And it's not always going to match the highest cost for you. And that's where people get a little bit confused. They think, well, this is going to cost me the most, so I'm going to charge the most for this. But that might not be the most valuable. In fact, the thing that's the most valuable for your customer might cost you nothing, but it's the thing that's the most valuable for your customer. A great example of that is cell phone data plans. So for the phone company to give you a gigabyte or 5 or 10 or 100 gigabytes is like pennies for them, but they'll charge you many dollars, many hundreds of dollars, because it's super valuable for you. Mm. And so it's not always a tether between value and cost. What I'd be trying to think about in your case is, what is the thing that when someone gets a hit of that one thing, it's very valuable? And I can give them the first 10 hits for free, but then on hit 11, it's going to start costing them money. The second piece, and this is where it gets a little more tricky, is you have to have a pricing metered strategy so that there's enough value for the small business client, that person that comes in and just wants to use it and pay $15 a month, but then the company that's benefiting from it enormously and is a billion-dollar company is not paying $15 a month. They need to be paying $15,000 a month. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that has to work in here. And this isn't all stuff you need to figure out on day one, but the first order of business that I'd figure out if I were you guys is, what is the point of value that is sleek, that is simple, that's super high value, that can pack a punch? And it sounds to me like it might be these creative ideas, the idea you talked about, those two different moments. Does that kind of make sense, Hugo?
That would be my take on it, John. I think when you ask every content marketer, what was their number one performing piece of content that went viral and they got 400,000 views on it and everything else sat on 700, and what that did to their follower base, what that did to some of the actions that they were trying to drive from that post, that's the super addictive, valuable thing that their manager is saying, how do we get more of that? And so often when we're doing a kind of pre-analysis of onboarding a client, we look and that post, that viral post, that creative idea is so often based around a relatable audience moment used really well by a brand. And actually, I was just looking at,
let me freeze you right there, Hugo, because what you said was the best thing you've said this entire conversation. That, if you could just clip that, it's, how do you make content that goes viral? And not to say, by the way, that that's actually what you should want, but that's what you do want if you're a marketer. And how do you do that? We have the data, the AI, the secret sauce that helps you do that more often. And that ties to follower growth, engagement growth, ultimately revenue growth. Does that sum up what you guys are offering?
Yeah, it's about, how do we make it super easy for you to act like a great content creator, spot the moment, spot the thing that everyone understands, and then use it really well in a branded context that doesn't oversell, but also has the potential to drive great value to your business. And the example that I can give is really counterintuitive in many ways. I was looking at a brand this morning that sells many different products, one of which is a bed sheet. And the moment that they use really well to get that viral post was that moment that's frustrating when you're trying to put your bed sheet on, or you wake up in the middle of the night and one of the corners has popped off. And it just is just hard thing to do that everyone's struggling with. And they've used it really, really well in two TikTok posts, that moment when this happens. And then they've sold their kind of super elasticated, never going to pop off bed sheet, and guarantee that's the product that sells best. and they're doing a new type of marketing, which actually people are being celebrated for. There's that very famous CMO, I'm not going to remember his name, who's gone to Stanley Cup from, I think, Crocs. And one of the first things he did was use Victoria Beckham's quote from the new Beckham Netflix documentary and use that in an ad. And it's used a moment that everyone's talking about. Everyone's talking about the moment where David Beckham kind of ridicules his wife for coming from a wealthy background and pretending not to. And he's used it well. And we're trying to build a product that combines that moment, brand, and audience understanding on a consistent, ongoing basis, and using the creative power of generative AI to think of ideas that you just wouldn't be able to think of based on the capacity that you have and the ability that you have. I think it's quite exciting.
I love that side of the pitch because it talks about the benefits. When you talk about viral content, relevant content, scooping up data, and maybe this is not at all how the product works, but I'll just make it up. It's, I'm looking at, you know, so you sell bed sheets. I can look at a data set of 100 other brands that sell bed sheets. I can look at all of their social channels. I can look at all their content. I can see the best performing stuff. And I can do that all in you know, behind the scenes in a snap of a finger. And then I can present you with the one or two or three content ideas that are cherry picked from the absolute best. And then I can offer you a way to do that for your brand. When you start to frame it like that, I get it. It has value. And then going back to the sort of value cost price trade-off. So there's a volume play. There's how often are we doing this? There's how many brands are we doing this for? There's also, I'm just thinking here, you could layer in things like compliance, competitive sets. So what are some things that a big brand would need that a small brand wouldn't need? Like a small brand just wants an idea. Like I don't care about much else. But a big brand might say like, well, you know, we need to worry about compliance, governance. We need to worry about demographic relevance. So like there's all kinds of other things that you could do and charge a premium for. And then you could have a price cliff where it's not just like the price doesn't go from 15 to 20 bucks a month, the price goes from 15 to 500 bucks a month because all of a sudden you're offering things that would only be required by a big marketer. So, and that's how you could really get into the more strategic pricing.
Yeah, John, you're pretty spot on actually with the way in which we're working towards our bigger enterprise testing. You almost just nailed it. Two kind of reactions that we're getting from the startups and scale-ups and SMEs is great, nice idea, help me execute and get it out on my socials. Of the big enterprises, it's a great idea. Tell me about the risk and the ways in which my audience segments are going to react to that content idea. And that's what we're working pretty hard on to bring out in the next kind of year or so.
Yeah, there's also, I'm just thinking there as you talk about the enterprise, there's also permission-based features. So the idea of multiple users would be multiple permission sets. So one person can program, one person can view, one person can program, one person can publish. Again, if you want to get into those types of features, you're going to be paying much, much higher pricing. So I actually think the more we talk, there's definitely separation here between small and big business. The small business, it's sort of, you just get your plain ideas. And as you get into bigger business, there's a whole bunch of, as you said, de-risking and more protocols, procedures that come in. And yeah, the software could be worth a lot more to them.
Yeah, 100%. The challenge though with big enterprises is that so often they're dealing with just so much information. You know, when we're speaking to, I always can't name any of these brands, but lots of the time it's, okay, this is just going to serve as another input. So as much as this reaction forecasting tool and using our audience modeling to predict how certain audience segments might react to messaging is very exciting, it's important for us when we're considering developing that to make sure that this becomes this like cold cutting, you should do this, and not just another, hey, here's another input that sits next to all your other inputs and is competing with human voices, creative agencies to actually really guide decisions and make an impact in a business. So that input versus output dynamic has been a big driver of us trying to, for the SMEs, get frictionless content ideas straight into your calendar and actually start writing those blog posts for you. Get all the way down to the end of the value chain. Don't just be another voice in the room, which is a risk when you're talking to a massive conglomerate that has five agencies and 15 different data sources to try and make a decision.
Is the bigger bottleneck in your business right now on the product side, on the fundraising side, or something else? What's the biggest thing holding you back right now?
Should we both have a go at answering that?
Yeah, go for it. I think they're both very linked. We've worked as hard as we can to do the learning that we need to do. And we see this startup life as just a big set of learning. And we have been learning to get to the point where we've got a statistically significant amount of customers proving certain conversion and value and pricing metrics that we're looking to target. The next stage will just be about doing that with more customers, with more statistical significance, more in-depth analytics, and for sure, raising a bunch of cash that will help us bring in more heads, accelerate towards those proof points. And, you know, we will simply see the next fundraisers get, and Rupert's the one modeling this up, is, okay, what does Series A look like in 24 months, 18 months, and how do we work as fast as possible to get there? So those two things are very linked, and absolutely no doubt, as soon as that funding arrives, we'll be able to learn quicker, which is how we can't constantly see it.
What's the biggest objection you get from VCs today?
It's funny, we are in week two of speaking with VCs. We actually had our first VC conversation yesterday, and we've got on in the hour after this. The main two objections we've heard: not quite enough data at a customer level as of yet to prove your valuation. So customer data, valuation.
Yeah, this feels to me, the risk here is that you bring on customers and the product is not sticky enough. That's number one. Like, you know, they can use this for a month or 2 months or 3 months. And is there some, can they just turn it off and there's no, I just wrote about this today on LinkedIn. So the words top of mind, the endowment effect. Is there something that becomes more valuable with time? You know, a great example is when you have software that learns about you or that holds your data, and over time, the fact that you're using it becomes more and more valuable to you, so that turning it off actually doesn't just mean switch off, switch back on. It's switch off, lose 2 years of value, and then I can switch it back on. Is there some way that your service can become increasingly more valuable over time because it learns, it stores, and it becomes more valuable? That's something that's kind of missing in the pitch so far. And then going back to the fundraising side, I'd want to see that people are sticking with it, that they're using it more, that they are actually saying, we can't live without this. The example I'll give you is Slack. Slack becomes more valuable over time because it already has all your conversations. If I deleted Slack, now I've lost 3 years of brain power, of knowledge, of resources, of a wiki of my business. And that's more valuable than if I just started using Slack at this moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, John, the nice thing about generative AI, as I'm sure you know, is that it's all about creating completion sets which work best for your use case. And not only are we doing that at a business level to ensure that we can create content ideas that are better than any other generative AI tool, but absolutely right, as you use it and as you interact with ideas that we send you, we understand what you want. We understand what fits alongside the rest of your Instagram content, your TikTok content, your blog content. So absolutely, does our tool get better at delivering content ideas for a brand over time? Yes. And then the second element is, because we're using this moment-based ideation trigger, which is the only kind of model on the market that's doing that, we're the only one that can plan as far in advance. It's like getting a Sprout social calendar, but it's pre-populated with content that you would put in it. And absolutely right, we would need to gate and ensure that people can't just like export out to Notion, export out to Asana, which are integrations that we've built, and then go, all right, see you later, guys. Thanks very much. We need to make sure that the moments go in, they trust that they're going to get great content ideas, but 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks in advance, those ideas populate and we don't just give them the year in advance. So both backward looking, does it get better with time? Yes. And secondly, are we the only platform that can give you that foresight? Yes. So there's lock in on both sides is at least the theory.
I like the forward looking lock in is actually really interesting. The fact that I'm going to plan for the next 6 months, 12 months post actually lock in somehow. When I say lock in, as you said, you can't export and repost elsewhere. It's got to be internal. And if you can do those two things, then you're right. You make it harder to leave because the history, but you also make it harder to leave because I've already set up my next 6 months. So if I cancel, I have to think of another way to get my next 6 months done.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. Can I ask about the we like the phrase couldn't live without. We even have a line on our customer text and on a weekly basis, which is, what's our CNLW metric for that customer for that week? Do you have any kind of science or experience with tracking that metric and any kind of methods that you've used in the past which have worked well for trying to get to an accurate answer to that question?
In terms of can't live without?
Yeah.
I mean, you can see that in the data. If you can track what people are doing, what pages they're going to, what tool they're using, you can rely on qualitative testimonial data, which is important too. But what people are actually doing with their thumbs doesn't lie. Their thumbs or their fingers or however they're using it. So I'd be looking at what is the thing that they are using 70, 80, 90% of the time. And then you can follow that up with questions and saying, hey, you know, we're noticing that you're really gravitating towards this tool. What value are you getting out of it? What would you be doing alternatively if you didn't have this tool? What did you do historically without this tool? If we remove this feature tomorrow, we're actually thinking about getting rid of this feature. Would that be something that you're okay with? I can't remember if it was Burger King or McDonald's. I think it was Burger King that was like, we're getting rid of the Whopper. And you saw people going crazy. Like, I can't believe you guys have the Whopper there in the UK.
Yeah, we do.
So it shows you, if we were to get rid of this feature tomorrow, what would you say to that? And 90% of businesses, by the way, if that company went out of business, nobody would care, nobody would notice. And the 10% of businesses that people actually care about, and they're probably a lot more so today than there were 20 years ago because businesses are so niche now and we all kind of love our products. Would people really care if you got rid of that thing? And if the answer is yes, that's a good answer. It means it's a good product.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're working towards.
And the time element is important there as well, John. As you say, you know, the more time someone spends receiving these ideas, the more reliant they become on them as the part of their, you know, start of their content creation process.
Yeah. So where are you guys going to be? Let's wrap it up here. Where, if we talk again in 3 months, where are you going to be?
Post fundraise, deploying capital into technology as hard as we can, and growing at about 30% month on month. How about that?
I like it. Hugo, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm going to have a short break, John, after this fundraise. going to take at least 2 weeks to just like rest my brain and get ready for the next 3 years. So I could well be on a beach somewhere, but after I get back, I'll be supporting Rupert with driving our financial model, doing everything that the product needs to do to get that financial model moving in the right direction as soon as possible.
And where do you see this? You said 3 years. So where do you see this business in 3 to 5 years?
We'd like to Series A in 2 years' time and Series B a year after that. We're then into exit territory as far as we see it.
And to do a non-numbers answer to that, John, we have an ambition to give the sense to every marketing team that their customer is in the room or their audience is in the room when they're marketing. And that means both understanding what's interesting to them every single week, but secondly, understanding how they'll react if you put out a certain message. And we think that's a really nice, imagine a little bot of your customer or your customers in the room that you can chat to, you can engage with. So you're not having to guess and use whiteboards, but you can actually speak to them and understand how to market to them effectively.
I love it. Guys, I'll be watching. Thanks so much for sharing your story here.
Thanks, John, for having us.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy episodes like this, make sure you subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And of course, follow me on Twitter @RealJohnDavids. We'll see you next time.